United States. Mr. Brown.
May it please the court. Morning, I'm Jerry Brown, and I represent appellant Scott Weldon. This is an appeal of his denial of his Section 2255 petition, which he was sentenced pursuant to a plea agreement. The grounds for the 2255 petition were ineffective assistance of counsel on two issues. First, that my counsel had been advised by his attorney that he stipulate that the drugs involved in the underlying occurrence constituted the but-for causation of the death of the third party of the group of people involved in the transaction, even though there was a toxicology report that reflected that there were a combined number of drugs causing the death. And second, that my client was advised that under the Swiderski case from the Second Circuit, my client was simply guilty and that there was no point in trying to litigate the matter further. After my client entered a plea agreement, agreed to testify against one of the other parties, who on substantially the same evidence was acquitted, sometime thereafter my client filed his 2255 petition. So regarding the first issue, but-for causation, again, the appellant understands that the mere fact that his co-defendant got a better outcome is not probative of whether he got ineffective assistance of counsel. It does demonstrate, however, that the government failed to achieve a conviction on these facts, and there wasn't a special jury verdict that separated out whether the government failed to prove but-for causation or failed under the Swiderski standard in terms of whether there was an actual distribution of the drug as it was within the group of three parties at the transaction. My client was deprived of the opportunity to try to raise reasonable doubt as to but-for causation. His counsel repeatedly advised him that that simply was not a viable or a realistic alternative. My client relied on that advice and forward, and his trial counsel has actually provided affidavits submitted as part of this record to indicate the repeated discussions about but-for causation and that it was necessary for him to tell him over and over and over again that
the causation issue is not your strongest issue here.
No,
There were two experts that testified to causation, and it was pretty ironclad that this was a but-for causation of the death. I think your stronger argument is the Swiderski, and that's likely what led to the acquittal of the co-defendant.
I agree, Your Honor. I'll move on to Swiderski. Thank you. The Swiderski issue is more difficult for a number of reasons. One, the Swiderski case, it has not been, to my knowledge, explicitly embraced by any other circuit, but it has not been explicitly rejected by any other circuit either. The cases that have addressed Swiderski have distinguished subsequent cases from Swiderski, usually on the grounds that the persons involved in actually using the drugs thereafter, at least one of them was not present at the actual transaction, so therefore someone who was present at the transaction somehow constituted a link to distributing that drug to the person who was not present at the transaction.
Right, and even though this circuit hasn't embraced the Swiderski doctrine, if it can be called that, it's certainly an available defense. So to the extent that counsel said it was not, that's erroneous legal advice.
That is correct. That is our position. And the trial counsel has provided an affidavit telling, in which he relates that he told Mr. Weldon that the Swiderski defense simply was not available to him. It's one thing to tell your client the law on this area is murky or unsettled, but it's something altogether different to just tell him flat out, you don't have a Swiderski defense.
Right, because we haven't excluded that defense, certainly. This court has not excluded that defense.
That is correct. And importantly, and I have tried to find other cases similar to this, one issue that comes to play is the fact that in our case, the three parties, Mr. Roth, Ms. Fields, and my client, unlike the cases that have declined to extend or embrace Wodurski, all three of the parties went together to the transaction. According to the stipulation, the car in which my client was an occupant drove up and parked immediately behind the car that contained that from which the person who sold the drugs was in, and my client got out of the car and went there. Based on those stipulated facts, it would appear that the other occupants of the car were as close to the transaction as I am to you right now. So under the Swiderski standard, all three parties were present at the transaction. So we would argue that based on the language of Swiderski, my client was entitled to a Swiderski defense, or at least raise one, that he was present as well as Mr. Roth and Ms. Fields, and under Swiderski, there can't be a finding of distribution between the three of them. There's no dispute that all the drugs purchased at the time were consumed or by the three occupants there. There's some record that my client simply didn't use some of the drugs and then poured it down the sink because he thought it was too much for him to handle. But there's no evidence of any distribution beyond the three people who went to and were present for the actual transaction of the drugs. The verdict in the Fields case, again, it appears that the jury based their verdict on a Swiderski argument, even though Swiderski was not explicitly mentioned in any jury instruction or any argument to the court. But if the jury was persuaded that there was not sufficient proof of distribution under those circumstances, it certainly stands to reason that my client arguably would have benefited similarly. Also, there's a lack of clarity in terms of how the district court was responding to the raising of the Swiderski issue. In prior to trial, Fields counsel did ask for a bill of particulars and raise a motion to dismiss based on Swiderski-like arguments, but again, without explicitly raising Swiderski. In rejecting those arguments, the district court did not flesh out any of the discussion as to what the appropriate Swiderski standards were. There is a case cited by the government as brief, and I apologize for not having found it in my initial submissions to the court, United States versus Speer. It's a Fifth Circuit case. And while here the court declined to grant relief based on Swiderski, the reason is telling. There were four parties involved in the actual use of the drug. Three of them were present at the actual transaction, which took place, again, one car parking right behind the other, and one of the occupants getting out, receiving the drugs from the occupant of the first car, getting back in. The reason that relief was not given to that fourth party was that that fourth party was not present at the transaction, but the court explicitly allowed for the possibility that the other three occupants might possibly be covered within the scope of Swiderski. So I think the available legal standards, as perhaps undeveloped as they are, indicate that Swiderski applies when all of the users were actually present and that all the drugs purchased were actually used for personal use. It was not at a quantity sufficient to implicate distribution beyond those three persons. So for those reasons, we had argued that the district court should be reversed and either the sentence vacated or the proceedings remanded back to the district court. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brown. And Mr. Garrison?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Bob Garrison. I'm a federal prosecutor from Southern Illinois, and I prosecuted Mr. Weldon at the district court level. I have trouble relating to much of the argument Mr. Mr. Rosen, I believe, made regarding the Swiderski claim. It's very fact-driven here.
Where's the distribution?
Right here, Your Honor, if I may quote from Swiderski. Swiderski rule is expressly limited to the passing of a drug between joint possessors, and I highlighted this. I put it in italics on page 8 of my supplemental.
Well, suppose the three of them had gone into the car in the front, whatever, and each had taken a chunk of the drugs. Would that be distribution?
No, Your Honor, and those are not the facts. Which I'm
pardon?
That would not be, but that's not the facts in this case.
So those are the facts in your view?
No, sir.
Would you listen to me and
certainly,
not interrupt?
Certainly, Your Honor, I apologize.
In your view, the essential facts to prevent this from being distribution is that the three of them would have had to crowd into the dealer's car and each take a little portion of the drugs. Is that what you're saying?
No, sir.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying here's what the government regards as the key language quoted on page 8 of my supplemental response. I'm quoting the case of U.S. v. Wallace. The rule announced in Swiderski is expressly limited to the passing of a drug between joint possessors, and here's the key language, Your Honor, who simultaneously acquired possession at the...
Yes, but that's what's so preposterous. The notion that the three of them would crowd into the car of the dealer and simultaneously take the drugs from him. They're all grabbing at it. The three arms are grabbing at the dealer's drugs, right?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir, if I might elaborate further.
Well, how is that different from what happened here? If one of them takes the stuff and, you know, shares it with the other two.
The degree of participation between the defendant, Weldon, on the one hand, and Ms. Fields and the dead man, Mr. Roth, on the other, are just diametrically opposed in this respect.
Diametrically opposed? I don't understand you. They park behind the dealer, and one of them goes in and gets the drugs and brings them back. So I'm saying, well, are you arguing all three had to go into the dealer's car? And you say no. So tell me what it is, what is the line between distribution and just sharing?
The dead man, Roth, asked Weldon to contact his dealer. Weldon did so. That's not in dispute. The dead man gave the money for this purchase to Weldon. That's not in dispute. Then the three of them drove to the dealer that Weldon had selected and whom only Weldon knew, and Weldon alone got out of the car and made the hand-to-hand exchange. Weldon was the only one who took the risk that the police would intervene at that point. The other two didn't. It was not simultaneous possession. It was Weldon by himself.
What do you mean the other two wouldn't? If the police came along and arrested Weldon, and then in his car there are two other people, you think the police are going to ignore them?
I don't think they would ignore them.
And they're going to find out, of course, that it was all three of them together doing this.
Well, it's speculation, Your Honor, but I would suggest that if the police came upon a hand-to-hand deal in progress, that they would arrest Weldon, and now what have you got? The people in the car have no drugs and no money. That is not Weldon's position. Weldon took the risk. Weldon was compensated.
They all took a risk in getting involved in drugs, obviously.
Only one of them had the connection.
Well, Fields, of course, was prosecuted, although she was left off. Wouldn't you say she was involved, having injected Roth with the drugs?
I would not have asked the grand jury to return an indictment had I not, Your Honor. I prosecuted Ms. Fields as well.
Right, so she was involved.
I thought
it wasn't just Weldon who was involved in this business.
Well, but the facts are highly...
It's such trivia, really.
Well, Your Honor, Weldon was...
Kiddling distinctions.
Weldon was a classic middleman in a heroin deal.
No, he wasn't the classic middleman. These are friends. He's not selling to anybody. They're pals.
Selling, of course.
Two people go into a bar, and when one of them buys the other a drink, is that distribution?
No.
Is that distributing alcohol?
No, Your Honor.
What's the difference?
The difference here, Your Honor, is that according to Swiderski, they must acquire possession.
Forget Dick Sigursky. Just use common sense. Two people go into a bar. They both want to drink martinis, and one of them treats the other. Now, is that one who treated? Is he distributing? Is he distributing the martini to the other?
Does he pay the other one $300 to get in the martini?
Pardon?
Does the look, Your Honor, the bar analogy? We've got the drinker and the man who may be distributing, right? If the drinker, to make the facts similar to Weldon's case, the drinker, there's no bartender on premises. The drinker would have to give money to Weldon, and Weldon would have to go find the bartender.
What are you talking about?
I'm sorry?
I don't know what you are talking about.
When
the car pulls up with the three of them behind the dealer, they're not all going to crowd into the car in front of them. That would be ridiculous. One of them goes to get the stuff, but he's getting it for all three of them. He's not distributing it. He's not selling it. They're
Your Honor,
pals.
Your Honor, if I might.
Honestly.
Well, I'm not. I'm trying
it's
to.
It's nonsense.
If I might, Your Honor, I don't agree with the court's.
How do you define distribution?
I define distribution as acquiring and distributing, not necessarily.
You define for me what you mean by distribution.
In this case, Your Honor.
No, not in this case. What does distribution mean to you?
Is
any time you hand someone to someone else, that's distribution?
No.
What is distribution?
In regard to your argument.
What is distribution?
It's acquiring a controlled substance and delivering it and distributing it to someone else, not necessarily.
No, but if you just hand the controlled substance to someone else, say, here, take this cocaine, I've had enough of it, that's not distribution.
No, it wouldn't. Your Honor, with respect.
So what's the difference between that and Weldon saying, let's get this drug and we'll have an orgy, you know, and maybe one of us will die, and you call that distribution?
Your Honor, I feel like I'm not being allowed to advance the salient point here, which is this.
Okay, I'd like to hear your salient point. Would you tell me what you meant?
Yes.
What's the salient point? Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Posner has made the argument that...
No, don't refer to him. Just tell me what the salient point is you want to make.
I will. It is Weldon who knows who the dealer is, and only Weldon. Weldon contacts Weldon's dealer. When they pull up behind the dealer, only Weldon knows that's my dealer. Do you think that the dealer who knows Weldon would sell the dope to someone he doesn't know, to wit the other occupants in the car? No, it's not a matter of they couldn't all crowd up to the dealer's car.
I don't understand you. Why wouldn't he sell to someone else?
Have you finished answering the question, my question?
Not quite.
Well, you're right.
But in answer to your question, is it logical that this dealer who knows only Weldon would have done business with a stranger that he does not know?
So you say that Weldon and the person from whom he got the goods were the two, and Weldon happened to distribute to the two in the car.
Yes, and I'm also saying that if the other two in the car had gotten out and approached the dealer in all likelihood would have not done business with two strangers. Weldon was the person who had the relationship with the dealer. Weldon was the only one who even knew who the dealer was. What Weldon did was unique and highly differentiated from what Fields and the Dead Man Rock did.
Right, and that may be the case, but these are arguments for a jury on both sides of the question of distribution, and the material question here is whether the defense counsel's advice that there is absolutely no viable argument on distribution here, so you should plead guilty, was faulty advice. There was a viable defense to the distribution charge, and that may or may not have made a difference to this defendant, but we don't have a decision on that point from the district court. There was no discussion of whether he would have pleaded guilty but for this erroneous advice. And that's the open question that remains. But clearly it was erroneous advice. There is a viable defense. There's arguments against it, as you've posited here, but it's not a lock, one way or the other.
Your Honor, Weldon was looking at a 20-year mandatory minimum.
That's the prejudice question, and that we don't have a ruling on that, so you don't want to go there. I'm talking about whether there's viable arguments on both sides of the distribution question here.
Your Honor, with all respect, if you read the five cases I cited in the government supplemental memorandum, every appellate court that considers this matter has rejected the Swiderski analysis on these facts.
Well, on facts that are distinct from this case because there's a separation between the transaction and the use.
Your Honor, I said in my brief that in the case of U.S. v. Wright from the Ninth Circuit, I don't believe that the facts are distinguishable. I think they are identical. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Garrison, sorry. Mr. Brown, anything further?
I think just a couple of points in rebuttal. The issue of whether Mr. Weldon was the only one of the three who knew the dealer does not appear to be relevant under Swiderski. The issue is all three of them were present at the transaction, and without going into speculation as to what would have happened had the dealer seen the other two, I'm not an expert on how the illegal drug market works, but the notion that drug dealers don't look for new customers, I think, would strike most people as unrealistic.
Right, and that all goes to the qualitative evaluation of, you know, whether this defense is likely to succeed, whether it's worth it to take it to a jury or you should take the better deal.
Exactly.
Deal in hand or take the risk and roll the dice. I mean, that those are all qualitative points that are particular to this case.
Yeah.
But
so,
it remains that this was at least an available defense.
Yeah, so I mean, regarding prejudice to my client, well, obviously, had he gone to trial and been acquitted, he'd be in the same positions as Ms. Fields. He did.
But we need a remand on that question.
Arguably, yes. My understanding is that my client has actually served a good portion of his sentence, so to the extent there is a remand rather than a vacating of the sentence, hopefully the proceedings would be done before the sentence that he's currently serving has elapsed. Otherwise, the relief would be moot. But unless there are further questions, I have nothing further to add.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Brown and Mr. Garrison.
Thank you, Your Honors.